So how many of you were up at the village this weekend or watched the event in one way or another? Good. So just about everybody. It was, I think, as we all know, such a profound event for so many reasons, but not the least of which was this incredible sense of Swamiji's presence there. And I left before Saturday night. I know some of you stayed. But Asha did write me a note, and she said, you must watch this. She said it was extraordinary, and she said, Swamiji just took over. Those were her words. So for anybody else, I don't think it's posted yet, but here we all have a treat in store for us. I was saying yesterday at service that we've had this incredible gift in our lives of having Swamiji be present, even for people who may have never seen him, really never had any private time with him. Certainly there's a lot of people who just came into Swamiji's life in these last few years when he was less and less available. And although I've been around for many years, I was not one of the people who was with him constantly. I was blessed with a few opportunities to be very close to him. Every once in a while, I wondered if maybe he got sick just so there would be an excuse for me to get to have some time with him. But he was sweet like that. You know, I mean, so many times it was just hard to know, and I'm eager to hear anybody else's stories. But I remember one night, he invited a few of us to go out to eat with him after we had put on a big weekend here, and it was clear that a lot of energy had gone into it. So there was a crowd that was all the planners. Of course, everybody was equally involved in some way, but for just by God's grace, a few of us got to go out for dinner with him. And as we were walking into the restaurant, he said, Shanti, I want you to sit right across from me. I want to look at you all night. What does that mean? Who knows what that means? You know, I asked somebody at some point, I forget who it was, it could have been Durga or somebody who really knew Swami well, and she said to me very appropriately, I'm not sure it was Durga, but it was somebody of that ilk in terms of Swami's life, just said, why even try and figure it out? He was just trying to bless all of us. And it was true, one by one, in some way, he did that. But I think for all of us, whether we knew him personally, in the body, sat down, you know, ever got to just have dinner after dinner with him or anything, he brought to us the incredible ability to understand these teachings that most of us simply could not have understood without him. I mean, so many of us have been reading the Bible. I've been exposed to the Bhagavad Gita since I was in my 20s. I was just listening to a couple of his talks today. There was one called The Attitude of a Disciple, so I listened to it. And two different talks that he gave on his own birthday that he spoke. And I was just trying to feel him this morning. And I thought, every word that he says, literally every thought that he goes to convey, he shares something that when you hear it, you think, oh, of course. It just makes such sense. But I knew, at least in my mind, that I would not have thought of it that way were he not pointing that out. And this is years and years and years. I don't know how many of you get treasures. If there's anybody in the room who doesn't, it's really worthwhile. It's just a gold mine of every one of his talks now digitally available to all of us. And it's just a wealth of spiritual information, understanding, wisdom that, again, we would have no other means of having access to. And then I thought when I was up at the village that none of us ever met Master. None of us. And yet every one of us probably feels some strong affinity to Master. Probably many of us came onto this path because of Master. Not necessarily because of Swamiji, because we didn't meet him when we were 19 or 20 years old. And without ever having had to meet him, we feel this extraordinary influence in our lives And it just came to me that that is what it will be. It is already, of course, but will continue to be with Swamiji. It doesn't matter with these very, very great beings if we met him or we didn't meet him. He came, he created sacred spaces, sacred moments all over this world. And I'm not sure if Joe Tisch said it this weekend or not, but I don't know if this came from my mind or Joe Tisch's mind, but it doesn't matter really. You know, once a spot is sacred like that, once it's been touched by a great one, it's always sacred. It's not like it leaves. It's not like the vibration leaves, or that the wisdom isn't always attainable. And I think we were able to say up at the village, we felt Swamiji, and many of us have said it, we've said it over and over in the last 13 months since he died, that he's in some ways out of that body. Many of us feel even more available to us than he was. But that can and hopefully will be true for everybody, for not just us, but for all of the people that we touch, all of the times that we share these teachings. As I mentioned in service yesterday, and I'll say it again just because so many of you weren't there, but Gita stood up, and you all heard her talk about putting these blue cards in books. It was called blue carding the books. And those blue cards were the way of taking Ananda and its presence and its information out to so many. So every time somebody bought a book, they got an email address and more information, and here's how you get in touch with us. And then Joe Tisch said at the Sevaka meeting, that's how we should all think of the mandirs. Every mandir is infused with the presence of the Murti that's in it. That Murti literally comes alive. I think we all felt that here when we installed our Yogananda statue. You know, when David walked that down that aisle that day, very unfortunate that that wasn't recorded for those of you who weren't there. But we all knew Master was right there in his arms. It was so powerful. And if you travel through India, you feel that. And every Murti, and they're sitting in a mandir, and Joe Tisch at the Sevaka meeting was talking about how now each of us becomes the mandir. We become, not the Murti, but the mandir, that next way of holding these teachings and of passing them on. And I think we have to think of ourselves as we plug into Swamiji. It's up to us now, every one of us. It takes energy. Joe Tisch was saying this to the Sevakas, but it's true for everybody. Every one of us can choose to become channels of this light by plugging into Master through Swamiji, the way these teachings have been passed down, the way we've been blessed to understand them. Now we become those blue cards, and we all take these teachings. And Swamiji's not here to do it now. And none of us should sit back and think, oh, all of the people up at the village, or David Nasha, or any of the people who have been around for 40 years. What about those of us who have been around for 30? Or those of you who have been around for 20? Or what if you're just coming onto the path in the last couple of years? It doesn't matter. There is no such thing as time and space when we're talking about these vibrations, when we're talking about sacred spaces. They were created at any point in time, but they're never again any less available. So we all have to think like that. We all have to say, what can I do now to honor Swamiji, who gave us so much? Swamiji said he came for two reasons. He had two purposes in life. He wanted to know and love God, and he wanted to share that love with everybody. That's our charge now. Every one of us has to think of how to do that. Otherwise, we're basically sitting and saying that in terms of us, his life was in vain. We don't want that. We want to really take the charge and carry it on. And everybody, I know I said to the Sadhaka trainees who were in the room the first week we met, you're coming into what we call a training group, or a study group really is more apropos. But that doesn't mean that anybody's coming in to that group not knowing a lot already. there are people in that group, just like there are people in this room who've been on this path for years. We all have a lot to offer. And we have Swamiji in large part, and then whatever ways we've connected to Master, both through Swamiji and on our own, to thank for this. And we have to realize one of the, I don't know if Swamiji said it in this or if I heard it today, but Master saying again, out of 5,000 people in an audience, he said, we'll be lucky if 5 stay with us. It's that 1 out of 1,000. And that's us. That's all of us. So we have to really recognize that and honor it. One of the other things that Joe Tisch said during that service on Saturday that was very compelling to me, he said, walking into the mandir, where Swamiji's body will be, obviously it'll be a sacred space, he said that at a vibrational level, we will all be able to tune into the 8 aspects of the divine through Swamiji, because he was living them. He had reached the point that we're all looking for, where we're always talking about becoming pure channels. Swamiji did. So he was love, he was bliss, he was joy, he was power, and all through all of them. And Joe Tisch was saying, let's all remember that at any moment we can call Swamiji to mind and we can plug into those aspects of the divine and just keep touching in. Swamiji left his body in no other way did he leave us. And I think today on his birthday is just a perfect time to make some commitment, each of us within ourselves, to say yes, we'll make his whole life worthwhile. When Swamiji was asked about coming back, and he said many times when he was sick, again, I don't know who said it this weekend, but I've heard him say it directly, oh, I'll be so, just, I'm fine to leave this body anytime. He said to me a couple times, I'd be happy to go anytime. And I don't like to think about coming back. But then he said, but I will. Of course I will. If there's any of you, he said, who need me, I would come back. I mean, what an extraordinary promise. He's saying to us, I will be there in any way you need me, at any time. And we can just, we don't have to wait for him to come back. We can plug into it. Now, listening to those talks today was so powerful. And even hearing his voice, so many different voices of his just now in this video, you realize just how close he is to all of us and what a gift he will continue to bring. So, I'm hoping that some of you have stories, comments, anything I forgot to share, not just about this weekend, but really experiences that you had with Swamiji. And in a way, specifically, just for the sadhakas, because this is what we were going to be talking about, let's talk a little bit about discipleship. Swamiji was the perfect example of perfect discipleship. In this talk that I listened to today, it was a talk from years ago, on right attitude for a disciple. He just kept saying over and over 2 things in that talk, which again you can all listen to through Treasures. He said the 2 most important things for a disciple, these are his words. One is to keep acknowledging that you have more to learn, that there's so much that you can learn, that you don't ever get to that place where you think you either have it or where you turn your back on great knowledge that's coming to you. Of course, he was talking a lot about his experiences with Master. He even shared in that talk some of the times when he doubted some of the things that Master said. But he talked about that quality of always being open to learning, to growing, to expanding. And to me, they felt like they went hand in hand. But the other thing he talked about is that it is essential that disciples learn to listen. And again, at the end of the talk, he must have spoken for 10 minutes about listening. In terms of defining what is a good disciple, of course, there's many, many ways to talk about that. But those are the two things he said. Always stay open to learning more things and always be prepared to listen. So,
I would like to share something. I'm Rada, I'm from North Italy, and I would like to share with you the power of the room where Swamiji died. For some reason, I'm compelled to share that with you. I never met Swamiji.
Come up here and talk. So you're speaking out to the group, and they can all hear you. And you'll be.
I never met Swamiji when I joined Ananda Assisi, and I was just preparing to take the discipleship. Something happened inside me. During the preparation courses, I noticed that somehow everything what was conveyed in the teaching and courses was already in me. It was like a program was started. That's probably something you all have already experienced, yeah? But one day before the discipleship, something I told myself, I don't deserve the discipleship. And I was very surprised, what's going on here? And there was this very deep pain in my heart, very deep. And I was very confused. I'm a very intuitive person, so I went to the temple and asked for help, for healing, or whatever it is what holds me back. And I prayed and I asked, nothing happened. The whole night I prayed. The next day was the discipleship ceremony. In the morning before the during the whole night, My own self did not agree with me that I am worth it to take the discipleship. I was very confused, very nervous, upset, crying. I don't know what was going on. The next morning, we had a meditation in Swami's bedroom where he died. It was at 7 o'clock, we all went there. We did energizing exercises in his living room. And then from his living room, we walked into his bedroom. We sat around the bedroom of Swamiji's bedroom. I was able to sit just at the end of his bedroom, and we meditated. And then it's an amazing experience. I can't describe it. I'm very sensitive to different energies, but it's so difficult to describe this part of energy. It's not just only that his presence is there, and I have never met him. You can really feel, it's not just that a person is there, or some kind of energy of a person. It's so huge, but the bedroom is so small. So, I mean, it's really confusing. Yeah, you sit there and you have the feeling you are like sitting over a huge ocean. But in fact, you are in a very small boxed bedroom. And then what happened to me, that's what I can convey, there was this huge healing energy, in particular around my heart area. And this was so dramatic. I had to cry so much. It was like really purifying me on so many levels, which I can't explain. It was not just physical. So much was going on. Many of my other Italian friends, we cried, we were trying to meditate, not to cry, not to get emotional, but there was so much going on. We were purified in so many ways, but also healed. It was such an incredible experience. And after that, we had our discipleship. So this was the first experience. Now you might say, well, this can happen, it was just once, but there was also something else. A month later, I was in Assisi. I won't talk too much.
No, keep on. This is fine. It's wonderful.
I have this tendency then to talk too much. I haven't done that yet here, so. When once we start. it's not so good. Okay, sweet, but I would like to encourage you, if you can, go to Assisi and visit his bedroom, because we do know that places where saints have died have a very special energy. Well, there another occasion, just to tell you another experience. Maybe 3-4 weeks later, I was over a period of 6 months, every month 1 week in Assisi, because I was determined I want to live there. But every time I went there, the guidance was, nope, not here, go to America. And I was not happy about this, because I found Assisi and that was it. Why should I go to America? I live in North Italy, so it's obvious Assisi is the best place from practical reasons. So my second time I was in Assisi, I went again for meditation to Swami's bedroom. And at that time, I was concerned about my heart. I had a divorce last year, although everything went well, but I was able to complete that relationship in a very good manner, and everything worked out well. But I noticed that my heart was closed, or partly closed, and I found it very difficult to be totally open to other people. And I didn't understand what was wrong with me. Why was it? I thought I did everything okay. So, what's going on? Yeah, it's just whenever I interacted with people, I would be closed down to make sure I don't get hurt. Whatever somebody says, this probably resonates with some of you. And so I was working hard to be more open, to have the courage to approach people with an open heart. You might say, well, that's easy at Assisi in Italy, everybody is open. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily. Most people have this problem that the heart is closed. And in one of the meditation at Swami's bedroom, in Swami's bedroom, again, I found myself sitting at the end of his bed, in this little bedroom, which is quite stuffy actually, again there came so much healing light, mm-hmm. targeted to the heart. Mm-hmm. It was incredible. It was like, you know, it felt like some air going around, some heat, some, you know, I can't explain it. You know, all these different elements we have, you could feel them, but nothing you could see. And it was amazing. And the energies were changing in different types of vibration. It was really incredible. So much released. At that time, I started writing a book, and the book was mainly, the intention was to write about the brain, also how people make decisions and how you can change your brain and the memories. After I came out of this meditation, after Swami's bedroom, I started to write about healing the heart. And I thought, I'm the wrong person. I don't know how to heal the heart. And it kept going through me and through me and through me about how to heal the heart and how to heal the heart. And the book changed totally. So what I was intended to write was only one chapter. It's now only one chapter. Now everything else is totally different. Now I will finish my story. The last bit is about discipleship. For Yogananda, I came here 4 weeks ago. I didn't want to come to Palo Alto. I don't know why. There was a huge fear inside me to come to Palo Alto. So I told myself, okay, I just come for 1 week. And when the week is over, I did my duty, and then I go somewhere else. The week passed, and I thought, okay, I should, the guidance was stay another week. I thought, okay, I stay another week. So it was 2 weeks. Then again in meditation, the guidance came from Yogananda, stay another week, or maybe stay 2 weeks. I thought, okay, I stay another 2 weeks. And at the end, it was clear to me that this is now my new home. Mm-hmm. But it was not my decision. Do you understand? Mm-hmm. And this is what I think is what discipleship is about, to trust when we receive that guidance. It is not easy, you can believe me. My brain is like mad because it has to process what to do and all this. But from previous experiences, what I experienced with other things, the guidance, when there is a strong guidance coming from our master Yogananda, it seems to be so unlogical, nonsensical. It doesn't make sense in your head at all. It seems to be really difficult, lots of trouble, but at the end, when you really do it, it's like a miracle. It's like something you can't imagine. And you can't believe that something like this is really possible. Many people ask me how long I am on the path. And when I say how long I am on the path, they say, how is that possible? I just joined Ananda Assisi in August. My discipleship I got in October. I'm now a Kriyapan. I feel Swami Kriyananda and Yogananda very close. I am tuning them very frequently during the day. So my life is totally decided by them. And my life is like a miracle. And that's it.
Sorry. You know, Alex Forrester, who was running the Sevaka retreat this past weekend, and he did a great job. He did this charrette where we brainstormed. And the first thing they asked us to do was to tell our story of how to write it down, how we came on the path. And then he was looking for people to share. And so one person shared and another, and he said, well, does anybody else have a great story? There were 200 of us. And I thought to myself, we all have a great story. How could we be on this path and not have a great story? And it's very, really very beautiful. So, yeah, I appreciate that. And I just would second what Mirella was saying. I couldn't believe what happened in meditation in Swami's bedroom. I have no words for it, but I kept asking Anand and Kirtani and other people, why is Swamiji's presence so great right here? And of course he passed there, but he spent so many extraordinary moments in so many places. But I just want to second what Mirella said. She shared so beautifully about her own experience.
Can I talk about the bedroom?
Yeah, I want you to. Yeah. But the presence there is really something other. Just in the presence.
Old bones. Well, mine is about the bedroom too. And I don't know if I've told you the story, have I? Have I already told it?
I haven't heard it. You have to tell us first so we know what story you're going to tell.
Well, for me, it's like the only story. Or, well, the most important story. I don't know if I can tell it or not. because every time I meditate deeply, then I go back to Assisi and the experience there, like I just did tonight. And I was a little comforted by the boatman. I read the boatman today, and I was thinking you should read the boatman tonight, but then I thought, or I would, but I thought, no, it can't possibly do read the boatman. But it's kind of like that. I was thinking that probably now Swami is in, I mean, he didn't merge with God yet. He went to Hiranyaloka because he thought he'd stop in and see Sri Yukteswar for a little while. And then they'll wait for a little while to come back till all of us have died, and then we can all come back together, you know. But those of us who don't, well, we'll all self-realize, but we may still have a little more work to do. So in Assisi, I volunteered for the very first sitting at the very first moment that we could meditate in Swami's bedroom, and which was quite early. It was 6 a.m. and it was dark when we first set out, and so the sun rose, and I think I was the first one into his bedroom because I just wanted to be in just the right spot. And so I got over by his little meditation altar space and settled in, and just, you know, I went into as much of a space as I could for me at the moment, which frankly wasn't very deep, and everything was distracting me. And so when I left his room, because we didn't get to be there very long, about an hour, and there was a more meditation, a couple hours more meditation going on in the temple at Assisi site there. So we all, of course, since we were the earliest, went up there, and I was thinking the whole way, I'm so disappointed in you, Joe, because you didn't really feel anything. You weren't with him. It was too quick. I'm too new, even though I'm 10 years, but it's new. And it's like, you didn't do it right, or something. You know, and I was really sad. And so, you know, at Assisi, they all are, you know, really, a lot of people come to the services, and I can't remember if this was a Sunday service or what it was, but there were a lot of people, and so I was late, and two rows from the front there were three chairs that were empty. It was the only empty spot in the whole space, and so I had to go up to the front, and there was Swami's picture in sitting in his chair, where I'm sure he always sat there. And I sat down in the middle chair and put my hand like this, and he came to me, and he took my hand. And I can relive that moment just time after time after time, and he just was so loving and so supportive and comforting, and it was just so beautiful, so beautiful. And after that, it was like I was just in an astral space on the whole trip in Assisi. I couldn't speak much, and except I was so focused on Swami. And I so realized how much he is Saint Francis too. He was Saint Francis. I don't know that if anyone ever mentioned that, but I so felt him being Saint Francis. And so visiting Assisi, the town of, and then Liverna, and the ride up to Liverna, we read The Little Flowers, and if you haven't read that, you should read it. The six, I think they're called precepts or whatever, and you read it, and you know that what Swami did to build Ananda, to create this for us, and what he went through for the lawsuits, and what he went through when he had to leave Master and Master's work in Los Angeles, and it's just your heart just fills hugely, hugely for Swami, and you must go to Assisi. Though I'm sure many of you have felt that at different times in your life, in one way or another, but it is true. It's very, very, very strong there, his presence. But I feel it here too. I feel him here. I feel him just so accessible. I think the closest I ever got to him in real life when he was alive was in Los Angeles, when he came to speak at the Ford Theater and someone passed out or whatever, and I slipped in backstage because I can be very unobtrusive. And so I got allowed to be back there when he was came in to sit and be with Marianne Williamson, and they talked, and I was like the housemaid over there, and it just like a little silent soul bringing water and doing that sort of thing. It's about as close as I ever physically got to him, and that's it.
The night that Swami passed, we had watched the movie Finding Happiness, and I went home and went to bed, and I remember waking up about 11:45, and I felt such love. I've never felt it like that, you know. And I'm lying there, and I'm thinking, boy, don't screw it up. What can I do with this? I don't know. I can't put it in. So I got up and I went into the living room and I started drawing a picture of Master. I was looking at his photograph and I just started sketching him, and then Shanti called and told me Swami had passed. And so every once in a while I still feel him, you know.
Yeah.
But he's here. He really is.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to talk about discipleship a little bit. And when I first became a disciple was in 1952. I was totally unconscious as a 9-year-old, and I was reading a magazine in my parents' house, and I turned a page, and I wish I remembered the magazine, but there on the page was a photo of Master lying in his glass coffin with the white-dressed disciples in the background. And the title on that page was The Incorruptible Saint. Because apparently he laid there for a long time and just the smell of roses was coming out. And the article talked about that. And that's the first time I felt that wave that you all have felt of transformation, just knowing something was right and having that connection and that aha experience of when you find this path that we're blessed to be on, that just that elevation of spirit. And then it passed, and I went back to being a 9-year-old and roughing up my sisters and being crazy until 1980, when we were in San Francisco. Connie and I were in San Francisco, and we were stuck in San Francisco waiting for our visa to come through to return to Japan. And we were doing the San Francisco supermarket of spiritual events, and we went from spiritual group to spiritual group to spiritual group almost every day. And one day, we're very interested in community, and one day we saw Donald J. Walters talks about communities and his pilgrimage to Italy. And it was in a storefront in San Francisco. And Connie and I went, and we sat there, and we met Swami for the first time, 1980. And he was his ebullient self and laughing with that deep baritone laugh and showing slides with a slide projector of his pilgrimage to Italy. And although we didn't connect with Swami, and I didn't have the experience at the same level that we connected with Master, there was something else that happened on a different level then. And we knew that that there was something there, and we couldn't identify it. We were doing the butterfly thing from place to place. But the most powerful thing was I felt like I met Master in 1952 when I read that article, and something happened. Maybe my consciousness went up here for a moment and fluttered down at what I was reading and came back into my body. But very precious, and I'm sure everyone here has had something like that, or we wouldn't be sitting here tonight. And that was my first call to discipleship. I felt I was called to discipleship at that point. In retrospect, I think that. As a 9-year-old, you don't think that.
At the Crystal Hermitage, up on the top of the garden, where they have the different rows, and the big esplanade with the columns. over at the far end, there's an acetylene tank used as a gong. It's hanging there. Mm-hmm. And next to it, a few feet over, is a fountain. And every time I stand in that one little, the edge of the wall with the gong and the fountain, I have I feel energy similar to what Morella was talking about and what Jill was talking about in that one spot. Mm. So yeah. you don't have to go to Italy when you want to. You can just go to this one part of the garden and have some fun.
That's really good to know.
It's so much more fun to go to Italy.
At a seclusion retreat for about a week, because that's all there really was. But we got to go in the truck, whatever they call it.
Shakti.
Okay. Swami's house, and he gave a class every day in his living room. And that was very, very special. And he let me record it, I remember that. And then I wanted to take a picture of him. And I still, it's funny how little things stick in my mind. I remember him saying, no, stand over there. That's where the light is better. I mean, it's a little thing, but it was very...
He was always thinking about the light.
Well, he was a good photographer. And anyway, it was a very, very special time, among other ones.
That sounds wonderful.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes when I am trying to describe Swamiji to somebody, I find myself saying to them, do you understand what I'm saying? This is humanly impossible. Human beings do not write 150 books. They don't write 400 and some songs. I really want people to get. No, you have to get. This is not a regular old human being that we're dealing with. And it's just so amazing to me. I mean, I love hearing these stories. I'd love to hear anybody, but it's just like watching, and we've all heard this, how he reaches out and manages to touch everybody in a moment. I know there are people in the room who have told me stories. Some of those stories are in my mind right now, but I won't tell anybody else's story. But where something special has happened in a moment, and he just reaches out and notices you, or comes to you when you're sound asleep, or whatever it is, he's just managed to touch everybody's heart in some way, or if not everybody, that many, many people in this room.
Shakti?
Yes.
I wanted to mention a time that's been just very, very, very dear to me. It has come to my mind again recently, and I don't remember what year this was. It wasn't that many years ago when he was really, really sick. And we...
You may need to speak up a little bit, Trish.
Yes.
When Swamiji was really, really sick, and we were asked throughout the world to pray for him around the clock. Mm-hmm. And I just... I don't know if I really felt the connection with him so strongly before that time. There was something about that outpouring from all of us of loving him that made me really experience him as my friend, that he was really dear to me, really in my life in a very, very special way. And does anybody remember what year that was?
I think it was 2007.
It was not that long ago,
yeah.
And it felt so much like that too when Asha came around the night that he passed and knocked on our doors, and we all gathered in the temple, those of us that were living here and others and mothers, and just that feeling of his presence with us, so, so, so sweet, so dear. I had very, very few times with him, and they were generally seconds long or a minute. They weren't really conversations because I usually generally went blank.
Yeah,
and smiled a lot. And,
yeah.
But what has stayed with me always has just been the connection, as he would look at me and I would look at him. Mm-hmm. And there's just something about that. And for me, it was singing his music is overwhelmingly connected mm-hmm. me with him. And I felt a lot about that this weekend when we were so blessed to be able to sing his music.
Sharmila, what did you experience when he looked at you and you looked back at him in that frozen moment in time?
Just my heart wide open. I don't really know that I even had words. But over time, as I had more than one experience of that, it just felt like there was a thread, a light, a love that was mm-hmm. there between us mm-hmm. That I've never known in any other way. And I don't really have words
yes.
that really express
that
it. It's more
great.
Of a feeling.
Yeah.
You know, it's Heidi.
Yes. Well, it's okay if I stay here.
I think so.
Yeah, okay, good. I don't know. So I'll just say it's what to say. My experience, I guess the thing I'm feeling called to say, especially with conversation a little bit about Assisi, but my introduction to Swami was in going to Biraj, actually. I went on a retreat with him. But I would come to the village and for trainings and yoga trainings, and for a period of time, I was living on the East Coast. Every time I'd fly out, I'd land, and shortly after arriving, there would be this buzz that unexpectedly Swami's coming to visit. And it happened over and over again. And I would think, wow, this is... And, you know, I didn't have a personal draw to... You know, but I thought, well, this is unusual. It's happening every time I come. And so the schedule, whatever I'd be in, would be rearranged so that we could be with him and he would talk. And I had this very strange, for me, experience where I could be listening to him and my mind would, you know, sometimes like what he was saying, sometimes not really. I'd kind of take issue maybe with this or that, but I would feel something. I would feel different. Mm-hmm. So I'd think, just listen, you know, similar to what you were saying, Shanti, of just, like, just be here, just listen. And I felt, I remember feeling a little uncomfortable, and I had kind of two different conversations where someone would say, you know, what did Swami say? And I remember, because I later then went on a pilgrimage where he did a 10-day giving talks, and I went because I was in a training. He wasn't at that training, but in the middle of the training, we were told the community was doing a pilgrimage to Italy, and it was open to people outside of the community who could come, but it would go, you know, seats would go very quickly. And I remember at break, I jumped up and ran to the phone and called to find out about it. And I just knew I have to go. Because for me, I could feel Swami was my connection to Master. He was a living connection. And I'd say to myself, don't worry about what you're thinking. Don't worry about it. You know, whatever he might say that I think, well, I'm not sure about that. I remember having those, I don't know what they were, but I'd have that thought, well, I'm not sure about that. Inside, I would have this, I'd leave and just feel like something is definitely happening. That pilgrimage did change my life, and it changed, just to say that I was there, and we had a tea with Swami, and Durga actually said, go sit next to him and give him cookies and tea, and there were all these little things that would work out, but I asked him a question, and he answered it. I remember I was very shy and in just the interaction. And that night I felt like, no, I need to really ask him. So I wrote this 15-page letter. God bless Swami for reading that letter. I wrote. And I was like exhausted, like, okay. And I gave it to him, and he was personally, but he agreed to speak with me. And so he spoke with me, as it all turned out, on the way to temple to one of the classes, someone took a picture of us. Mm-hmm. Later said, look, you know, he just sent me this sweet little note, look what I have. I saw, she stopped and went, oh, that's a picture, mm-hmm. you know, to give to me. And I can still hear him calling my voice, because he was asking something, well, where is Heidi? I mean, he didn't know me. And he spoke to me, and the main message that he said to me was, it would be good for you to live in community. And he said, and I'm going to cry because we're moving here soon. He said, and this was in 2001, and he said, I understand you're married, and I don't know if your husband's on this path, which he wasn't at the time. He said, I don't know how he would feel about it. And he was just like, you know, so you have to take that into consideration, but it would be very good for you to live in community. And I said, you know, I was like, okay, and I fortunately went home and wrote everything down. That was the message, and I came home, and it really, in this very beautiful, subtle way, it completely transformed our life, completely. You know, that all these unexpected ways, the gym ended up coming on the path, not me doing it by any means. So anyways, I'm just, but that one thing, and I'll end with this, I recently was talking to someone who's saying they want a spiritual teacher, and I said, well, you know, listen, like, pay attention to how you feel. And for some reason, I felt called to tell her the story of Swami. I said, I've had the experience of my head taking issue with something someone was saying, but them being my teacher and knowing it. Mm-hmm. And so I said, it's good to pay attention to what people say. That's important. But pay more attention to what you feel in the presence of someone. Listen with your heart. You'll know then who mm-hmm. your teacher is. Mm-hmm. So I feel so grateful to be here. Mm-hmm. Everyone is.
Mm-hmm. Yesterday, I was mentioning in this in the talk that I gave, two things feel important right now. One is that there's no accident that any one of us are on this path. We incarnated to come on this path, to be alive at this particular moment, to be in Master's Ray, and to be with Swamiji. And I think every one of us has to realize that for ourselves. I mean, it's what we've all been saying, these extraordinary experiences. And this is why we're here, is to be on this path and to know these great souls and to be influenced by them. And the fact that Swamiji said over and over he wanted to know God's love and he wanted to share it with everybody, and it's just so deeply touching to feel he did just that. He touched everybody. I mean, one by one by one. Everybody's got their story. I don't know if there's anybody else who wants to share it, but I just feel that this is a moment where, you know, we could all say to ourselves, hold on to this. We are really here for a very special reason. It's not just circumstantial. It's that life can never be that way. Our souls were drawn right now. I mean, we could each say to ourselves, but for this moment was I born. Of course, we could say that every moment. It's always true, but it just feels so poignant right now. And to really practice plugging in to this extraordinary energy that's been a part of each of our lives and is clearly very much alive in many of us, if not everyone. I think even if we don't know it, when Heidi was talking, I was reminded of something that Asha said to us many times. When she would question Swamiji when she was young, when she couldn't understand what he was saying or she didn't agree, she developed this image of having a closet where she would put that thought or that idea. You know, she wasn't going to leave the path because of it, but she would just put it away and come back to it later. And inevitably, she would grow into it. And I think that's just so meaningful for us to say, we're here for a reason. It really matters. And it really matters to live up to that, to ask Swamiji, to ask Master for guidance, to show us, how am I supposed to be a channel now? How am I supposed to be used? Because there's no doubt about it when we hear the stories. So,
Mike? A question. You mentioned treasures a couple times.
I mentioned
treasures. Yeah. What is that?
So treasures along the path. It's at the Ananda.org website. Treasures Along the Path, which is
treasuresalongthepath.org, actually.
They have their own.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's a library digitalized
online. I was wondering what.
No, but you can't listen to the talks online. You have to. You have to subscribe to them, and then they'll send you an MP3 once a month for $10 or $11, or. I mean, they'll do it. You can buy the sets. They're just remarkable. Mm-hmm. And any single thing that you want to learn more about, listen to, expand your knowledge of, feel an inspiration from, Swamiji's talked about it. And it's there.
Last month he did energy and magnetism. And it was a very powerful tape and piece. And he laughed a lot. I think he even told a joke. But his laugh was so wonderful, and it made me get the P.G. Woodhouse book for the first time, and I've been reading P.G. Woodhouse, and I have been laughing my head off, and every time I think of that laugh from that CD, and I feel like he's right there, we're just cracking up, and we're just howling. I mean, I can't imagine I've been so long before I picked one up. They're so funny. Hip, hip.
Does anybody else want to talk? Anybody else have a wonderful moment that feels right to share?
It's not really interaction with Swamiji when he was here, although I was with him a short few times. It's more just something I'm working through, and I was up at Sunday service a couple weeks ago, and I went up to the altar, and I was looking at Master's picture, you know, and being devotional, and just very grateful for what he had done for us. You know, I was standing in our beautiful temple. We have our Gurubais, our community. He gave us Swamiji. And he went through a lot. I mean, Master gave up his home in India. He gave up his guru over there, you know, I mean, he still had the connection. He worked hard, totally hard, gave everything. And I thought, well, what am I giving back? I'm just reaping the benefits of all his work. And how much more can I give back? And then I was up at the Expanding Light this weekend. I went to meditate by Lotus Lake, and I was coming back just feeling blissful, gorgeous nature and on that land. And I started having the same thought of how grateful I am and how much Swamiji gave us. There would be no expanding light without him. And he had nothing, right? He got kicked out of SRF. He was by himself. He was at his parents' house, devastated. And from that, he has given us all of this. And he never sat on his laurels, and he always worked, was juggling so many balls to accomplish all this. And, you know, I just, aren't we grateful? Aren't we so grateful that this exists?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so how much can we give back? You know, and it's back to being a channel.
But it's a beautiful, what you're saying, Lilavati, is, you know, I'm sure if I listened every minute of that talk that he gave on right attitude for a disciple, that would be right there. Mm-hmm. You know, what can we bring? How can we keep this going? How can we serve? It's just, it's perfect. Very lovely, really.
for someone who's busy all the time, I have to feel like, what am I doing? I'm not doing that. And now I think, you know, it's every thought that I have, if I choose love with every thought, I'm actually doing something. And so I'm like, if I can keep just positive thoughts in my head, I'm actually doing something good for the world. So I'm like, okay, that's my devotion.
That's good devotion. Okay, it's 9:05, and we have birthdays to celebrate. So what we need to do is I hope this is okay with everybody, but it's getting late. We have a nice, beautiful, should the cake come out, Jill?
Yes.
Okay. The cake should come out, and we're going to sing, although it's a custom-made cake, I have to say. It's charming. So it is Swamiji's birthday, we all know that. It is Dhananjaya's birthday, and it is Stacy's birthday. So when the cake comes out, here it is. The candleless cake. Let's add our own light to this cake. It's okay.
I was going to put a votive on it, but it doesn't cover everything.
Happy birthday to you.
It's a farm of chickens.
Happy birthday, Swamiji Dhananjaya and Stacy. Master's blessings on you. Jill had this cake made. It has the form, and it has chickens on it.
Yes.
and he insisted. I wanted to get, you know, a red velvet cake, but he wants vanilla cake with chocolate frosting.
Birthday boy gets what he wants.
That's great.
Oh,
So there's water for tea if people want it, and there's about to be cake. Should we end by sending out 3 ohms to Swamiji? We need to do that. Let's first just end with a prayer. Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, Friend, Beloved God, Jesus Christ, Babaji Krishna, Lahiri Mahashaya, Swami Sri Yukteswar, our beloved Gurudeva, Paramahansa Yogananda, Saints of all religions, Beloved Swamiji, we bow before all of you. We come to you now. With great gratitude. For all you have brought into our lives. Be present with us. Help us to see how to serve. So that we become. Pure channels of your light and love. To everyone. Allowing them to experience. Your joy. As you have allowed us.
Peace.
Amen. Let's rub our hands together now. Let's just hold thoughts of Swamiji at the point between the eyebrows, sending him our love, our gratitude. Use your own words right now, your own feelings, whatever it is you would love Swamiji to feel from you. Let's chant Om 3 times and send that out to him. Peace. Amen.